Welcome, everybody. We're back with our podcast. It's great to have Dr. Bell right here.
It is great, and it's great to have our guest, Greg Haygood, who is the founder of Nephila Capital.
That's right.
That's the name, Nephila Capital. Greg, thanks for being with the class. We were saying, Dr. Box, that this may be his golden decade. This might be the decade of him teaching the class. So he's had a big influence here at Emory. Greg, tell us a little bit about what the word Nephila means and why you chose that for your company and what y'all do.
I know. That's such an unusual name. Tell us more.
It's a great question. First of all, delighted to be here. Great to see you both. So we are in the catastrophe business for hurricanes and earthquakes. And Nephila is a spider that's indigenous to Bermuda, which is where we lived when we started the company.
Okay.
And it, old folklore said in the old days, the spider would spin its web high in the trees on sunny days and low next to the ground and in inclement weather days. And so it was a predictor of when bad weather was coming. So Nephila is just a predictor of hurricanes, we hope, over the years. So that's the history. And our wives chose it, which was good when you're going out into business on your own. You got a little cover when the wives are bought in. So
there you go. There you go.
So how long ago was that?
Well, we started Nephila in 1997. So this is our 25th year in business, if you can.
Wow.
So yeah,
that's
so
amazing.
We got another golden decade,
and
I guess.
So over that 25 years, what has changed and what has stayed the same about making investments around the hurricane and earthquake business?
Wow, that's a fantastic question over a long period. I mean, I think the one thing that stayed the same is we really try to be a fiduciary to our investors. That's super important to us.
And sure.
There are some models in our industry where the fiduciary model is a little more clouded. Good, bad, or indifferent. Sometimes they have multiple stakeholders, and we certainly view our investors as first and utmost importance. I mean, a ton has changed. I mean, the models, the model catastrophe risk has changed dramatically. Things like climate change have become much more relevant topic. Some things, frankly, in the world, and as relates to litigation and what we call social inflation or fraud that's embedded in some insurance claims, has become relevant in the industry. The capital that supports the industry has become much different. If you go back as recently as 15 years ago, it was predominantly balance sheet capital at insurers and reinsurers, and we were kind of the first fund manager in the space. And today, about 25% of the capital that supports catastrophe risk is from off balance sheet capital for fund managers and people like us, and not on the industry's capital base. So
it's gotten more competitive for you for sure then, huh?
It has, until the last 5 years, when there's been a lot of catastrophe activity and people are kind of retreating from the space right now. So
we're
all markets have their cycles, and people are a little freaked out right now with a lot of activity in the catastrophe space. And we're navigating that with our investors as we speak.
Excellent. Let me ask one question here. What's the size of your funding? Give us a sense of the size of the industry as a whole.
Well, the reinsurance industry as a whole in the catastrophe sector, about $450 billion of notional risk trades annually between insurers and reinsurers, just trading catastrophe risk. We manage about $10 billion of capital. People like us manage about 20% of the capital that supports that risk in the industry today, where if you go back 15 years ago, it was almost zero.
Right.
So it's been a big transition. And obviously, sure, most people know this, but in the fund form where we take just the pure catastrophe risk, what people like is it's not correlated to stocks and bonds. It's purely event risk. So if, the capital, 2009, the world was imploding, we had a plus 15% year, not because we were short credit or short stocks. There were no catastrophes that year.
Right.
So it's an independent return stream, and people like that diversification.
Yeah.
And it's my view, and it's been my view since Greg and I have known each other, which has been 20 plus years, that it's one of the largest uncorrelated markets. That's one of the largest uncorrelated markets, and that at half a, $500 billion, it's a huge market to be uncorrelated to the stock market.
Excellent. Let me ask you maybe a follow-on question. Tell us for our listeners, are you like an insurance company? Is that the way to think about what you do? Or help us a little bit better understand sort of where you play in the ecosystem and kind of how that's set up for those that are learning about this business.
I mean, I think for simple purposes for today, I would think of us more like a reinsurance company.
Okay.
So insurers want, I'll just give an example. State Farm writes a bunch of business in Florida.
Right.
They want to write life insurance and auto and things that are kind of normally distributed. With that comes the property exposure. And, if you have too many properties in Florida, if you have a Hurricane Ian, you have an outsized exposure relative to your balance sheet. So they want to lay that risk off with someone. That's historically been reinsurers. And the last 15 years, it's also been people like us. So we take that volatility that insurers don't want. They pay us a premium over time that we think is above the odds. So, you know, there's going to be years where we have down years where that volatility manifests itself. But, you know, over time, you should have a positive expected return and a non-correlated asset, which we would argue has a place in a portfolio.
It's excellent.
And when we think about, so 5 years after Greg started teaching here, Emory made an allocation out of its endowment. They may have picked a different manager, but they, with the proceeds from that investment in reinsurance, were able to actually start, I think, one and now two new professorships. So it's had a strong impact on the school. As we think about who allocates to reinsurance going forward, is it, do you think the growth is in areas like endowments, pensions? Is it retail individuals? Is it that muddy middle of wealth?
Family offices.
Yeah, where's the growth coming?
Well, I mean, I'll just give you a reference point. Our client base today of our $10 billion, 85% is pension plans.
Yeah.
And some of that's driven directly with relationships, and some of it's through the consulting channels, the Aons, Willis Towers, Watsons, who represent those folks. Endowments are definitely a component of our work. I would say family offices and retail is probably, it just gets tricky, like when there are losses, when there's, Hurricane Ian's on the news and they're down 10 or 15%, that doesn't sit well with everyone because they don't understand it quite in a detailed fashion as an institutional investor would be. So it's not the perfect choice for retail. So if I had to forecast the growth, I think it'll just be the existing players taking a bigger share over time as they get comfortable with it. I doubt retail's the place. I mean, I don't think that's the lion's share of growth.
And so, Greg, a number of years ago, you opened a California office and started a weather business, which you've changed a little bit. And obviously, your structure's changed over the years. Can you tell us about the small part of your business that isn't around hurricanes and earthquakes?
Sure. So we have a kind of a second business that has about $1 billion of assets under management. And I would say it's like insurance related, but it's insurance for what I'll call the transition to net zero. So as things are getting built, like wind farms or solar plants or hydroelectric facilities, they need insurance to make those projects work. So again, you can have a non-correlated risk that's supporting the transition to net zero that's in a different structure. And that makes a lot of sense for folks who are looking for things that are not hurricane or earthquake related, but they're insurance related and not correlated. So other areas that would lend itself to would be like conservation easements, you know, trying to protect land as you build, battery storage, things of that nature, as you kind of build out the infrastructure and the world's kind of transitioning over the next 30 years to net zero, which is how does insurance play a role as an enabler in that transition? And we're trying to get money to support that in another non-correlated strategy.
Tell us a little bit about like secondaries, like the secondary market. Is this like an actively traded market for you? So suppose you have a little bit of a mousetrap and you can predict Ian a little bit better than your competitors. Mm-hmm. Can you trade on that right away, or is it sort of a fairly illiquid market in that way?
I mean, for simple purposes, it's pretty, I'm just going to say it's illiquid. I mean, most of the insurance contracts are one-year contracts, like your homeowner's policy is. So they're short-dated, which is good. If you're worried about things like climate change, you're not hung in some 10-year contract, you can reprice it.
Right.
But for the most part, I'm going to say the contracts are kind of buy and hold for that 12-month period. You can buy, we buy reinsurance ourselves as hedges.
Right.
If you have a catastrophe bond, which is the traded product of our market, they're double B rated, they have broker dealers.
I see,
About 10% of the overall market of that $450 billion that trades, about 10% is in cat bonds. So those are liquid in that they have a broker dealer and you could trade daily in theory. But 90% of the market's buy and hold, other than you could buy insurance yourself.
Excellent. And so really your advantage is to be able to figure out what the likelihood of a big hurricane is, or any hurricane, a little bit better than the competitors and kind of do a pricing advantage. Is that sort of what people compete on? Is that sort of...
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's risk selection, there's risk management, there's, you know, these aren't things you can buy on Bloomberg or on, you know, your phone, right? You have to have relationships and add value to counterparties that you trade with. So I'd say it's like, you know, origination sourcing, you know, visibility across the whole market, certainly having better research or as good a research as most people, digging a little deeper than many people. And, you know, just putting portfolios together that are well risk managed over time.
Excellent, excellent.
So, Greg, you have started, you worked for a huge company, you started a small company, you built it into a huge company, and now is part of a huge company again. As you think about students here at Guazetta, what skills or what tools from your education or your business life have served you well and that you wished you had invested in honing?
It's a great question. Well, it's funny because we have this conversation every year that I come. Like one of the last slides I have is like job opportunities.
Of course.
The market, You know? I mean, because first of all, we're looking for people. So if anybody's listening that's interested in what we're saying, we'd love to hear from you. But, you know, you can go for like the quantitative side. So there's the actuarial side, there's the research side, there's the climate change side, or you can go more for like the portfolio management side where you're actually putting portfolios together, running optimizations, looking at sensitivity analyses and, you know, stochastic modeling, those types of things. And then there's more the, if you like dealing with people, there's more the insurance brokerage side. And brokerage these days, if you work for Aon or Willis or so forth, it's not, as, I mean, it is transactional by definition, but 10 years ago it was really transactional. Now it's not, it's a little more consultative.
So how
are you adding value to State Farm if you're their broker? It's not just clearing the risk. It's how do you help them look at their balance sheet and how much they want to keep, how much they want to lay off. And then if you have a, you know, if you're more, like to deal with people more, you're out in the market kind of syndicating that risk and so forth. So I think the broking world sometimes kind of, people in business school in particular, because they're quite numerate and smart typically,
right,
they may think it's more transactional and just traded, but it's become more consultative. So I wouldn't discourage folks from looking at that as well.
Well, excellent. Well, thank you so much for being here, Greg.
Sure.
It's just absolutely thrilled to have you. I know you've been a great supporter of the school. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
This was the podcast for this week. Mark, thank you for being here. Greg, thank you for being here. And my name is Klaus Box, and we'll see you next week. Thank you.
Thanks, Klaus.
Bye-bye.